Hello, it's Elliot from the Many Sided Media team here to tell you that we are running our first ever Patreon drive. Our goal is to get 100 new or upgrading annual members at any tier to join the Patreon. So, why are we doing this? We want to ensure that Many Sided Media can continue to produce all the shows you know and love, Talk of the Table, My First Dungeon, Bitcherton, as well as some new shows that we're excited to tell you about in the year to come. We want to keep Many Sided Media surviving and thriving for the next year and years beyond, paying people fairly for the work they do and keeping everybody happy, healthy, not burnt out. The best way for you to support these efforts is to join our Patreon. What you get when you join? Bonus talkbacks, bonus actual plays, our newsletter, the Many-Sided Newsletter, the exclusive show Under the Table where Brian and I talk about business, and a whole lot more. So please head to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and pledge your support. Thank you so much. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Caldwell Tanner. Caldwell
Hello.
Is the co-founder and cast member of Not Another D&D Podcast. Caldwell, welcome to the show.
Oh, welcome. Thanks so much for having me. Brian, I really liked that you got into it with the drumming. It was really impressive to see.
Gotta get into it with the drum. See, the thing is now, usually we cut that bit out of the podcast and it's just the theme song that comes in. But now it's been referenced so much that now almost have to keep it in.
Anytime it's referenced, I leave it in.
Mm-hmm. Do you really?
If,
I should really
listen back to
our show. If a
guest references it, I leave it in.
Who's not referencing it?
I don't know. Cowards. Frankly.
Cowards. Craven fools.
Elliot coming for half of our podcast guest audience.
Our guests. Yeah.
People coming on the show being like, I simply must talk about the tabletop and the meta going on right now.
Nah.
I got to compliment Brian's drumming. Do you actually play drums?
No, but I do magic.
Whoa. What a response to "Do you play drums?" Not no, but I play guitar. No, but I do magic.
Oh my God. You just the conversation just got hijacked. I asked a polite question, and now I'm sitting in the front row of a close-up magic show.
And that's the rest of the episode. Strap in.
Okay, I guess. All right, I'm describing the magic that's happening. Okay.
Oh, ooh, all right.
Sleight of hand, bringing it back around. Hello, it's so great to be here.
It's great to have you here. So, Caldwell, NADPOD,
yes.
8 years, 260 plus episodes, three main campaigns, five short campaigns, 10 one-shots, and a wild amount of cases adjudicated on Dungeon Court and dice-related sins forgiven in the Church of Dice Christ. To start us off, I'm curious, how do you define sort of the formula behind NADPOD? Why? What do you think is like the secret sauce you've got going over there?
Oh,
at
gosh.
NADPOD?
I mean, I think one of the aspects of the secret sauce is talking a lot about sauces and secrets. just not letting, again, by that, I mean like not letting things be too serious or too stale. I think we like to innovate and switch things up, which I think has been very helpful for us. You know, we've had a lot of fun D&D campaigns, but then we also do a lot of fun silly side stuff that I feel like helps maintain the balance and helps keep us from burning out too much. I mean, you mentioned D&D Court, and I feel like that's been such a fun addition to the show, is like getting to kind of open our table to others and hear the insane drama that's taking place out there in the wide world. I would say that's just an aspect of the success of the show, maybe is just kind of trying to innovate and keep up with things. But I think a lot of it boils down to what makes D&D and tabletop so fun is we're just always constantly trying to surprise each other and do new things that will make us all laugh and make us enjoy our time together.
It is really tough to, even when you're doing something that you love, at a certain point, no matter what it is, it can start to get stale. You can start to burn out. You can start to get bored of it. It's great that you guys have found like great ways to revitalize that.
Right. And it's a thing that we all love, but also it's like so much fucking work. Like, I mean, imagine, because, you know, everyone here, I imagine, has DM'd or GM'd something. And like, that's very fun to do for a home game or like with your friends. But then like, imagine like going and playing that home game and then you got to like go home and you got to like listen to yourself and listen to all the mistakes you made as you edit it down to like a listenable piece of audio content. Yeah, I think it's very easy. There's a lot of prickly edges that accompany the beautiful fruit of D&D inside. But you gotta, yeah, I feel like it's hard to shave those down sometimes, but I do think that, yeah, we've done our best to find ways to avoid that burnout. And I think that's like the big challenge with all of this, with anything that you love, you know?
I think before we hit record, you were telling us that you were up late last night before recording editing an episode. So it's like, I feel like for any actual play producers listening, it's like, you know, even at the scale that y'all are at, you're dealing with the same kinds of problems we're all dealing with of just like, sure. Oh shit, I have an episode tomorrow that I have to finish editing.
Right. And I love that aspect of it as well. I feel like, you know, it's the double-edged sword of all of this, but like, it's so fun to me to get to, I work with an incredible, like sound designer named Daniel Ramos, who, I like kind of go back and forth with him, for like the Trinaville episodes we've been doing. And I'll like, put together like a list of like notes about how I want like, you know, the sound to feel and like where I want sound effects to go and like what tracks to use, and just getting to like hear it come together. I don't know, I love kind of that collaborative piecemeal process of seeing like it, all the layers pop in place.
I've said this on a few recent things that we've done, but so for a long time on our Actual Play podcast, My First Dungeon, I did all of the like editing and sound design and stuff. And very recently, we brought on another sound designer, Jay Stroutman from Planet Arcana. And we went back and forth. Like, I would do one episode, they would do the other episode. And I would always do the dialogue pass, and they would do some of the sound design. And it was such a, like, great moment for me to have someone do the sound design, bring it back, and I got to be surprised by my own show again. You know what I mean? Like for years, I did all the things. So at the end of the day, I was like, yeah, I know how that came to be. And all of a sudden, I got to hear my own thing for like the first time again, which it was a true joy. I wasn't expecting it to hit me that much.
I mean, I think the thing I've always liked about tabletop is it's collaborative, and it is weird that for the podcast format, you do end up with so much isolation. As a GM, there's a lot of isolation, I guess, involved because you're just planning and prepping. But even that, I've tried to like find ways to make it more collaborative. Usually that just means like hijacking my wife and forcing her to like go get a coffee with me as I explain some bullshit about vampires for an hour. But like, I don't know. I think that is the challenge doing this for like a public audience, is like finding ways to like keep it collaborative. Like, because I think that for me, that is where a lot of the fun comes from. And I think, yeah, like working with sound designers and other people during like the editing process really can like enliven things.
We usually don't talk a lot about like origin stories on this show. But I'm realizing now, I don't think I've ever heard the story of how NADPOD came to be.
Oh.
Can you give us the story behind that?
Well, I guess like the beginning is that we all worked together at College Humor, which has become Dropout now, but College Humor back in the day was just a comedy website back from the time when websites existed and people went to websites. It's coming websites? Back, I think.
Yeah.
It's slowly coming back, I think. But yeah, we had a comedy website and we all worked there, Murph and Emily and Jake and I. After we all left there, Murph and Emily and I started a podcast called 8-Bit Book Club, because I think this was like during the era where, you know, we were all comedians working in LA, and we're like, well, I guess you just have to have a podcast. Even if it's not good, you have to do one. And it was very fun for that reason. I think that 8-Bit Book Club is, if you listen back, if you can find it, it's scattered to the winds at this point. But there is a lot of kind of early NADPOD. There's some core identity of NADPOD buried inside there. But yeah, so we did a podcast called 8-Bit Book Club where we would literally read video game adaptions, video game novel adaptions. So novelized versions of video games like Myst or World of Warcraft. We also did a lot of Choose Your Own Adventure books. And we started doing that, and it was, you know, doing okay, but we did an episode of that show that was us playing like a little Monster Madness D&D tournament, essentially, where we like picked, like, I think like challenge rating like 1/8 monsters from the Monster Manual, and we battled them, and it was very fun. And I feel like when we did that, we realized like, oh, this could be something. We could maybe actually do more, you know, actual play episodes of 8-Bit Book Club. And from there, I remember Murph and Emily were at a party with Jake. I don't know why I wasn't invited to the party. I was probably out of town. I was probably busy. But anyway, they were at a party, and Jake cornered Murph and said, "We should play D&D, and we should make a podcast about it." Or I think specifically, like Murph was talking about D&D with Jake, and Jake said, "I want to play D&D." And from that, they decided that we should make a podcast about it. And then Murph and Emily came back to me and said, "Hey, we're going to make a D&D podcast." And I said, "I don't want to. I'm too busy." because at this time, I was working at Disney full time doing storyboarding, and I was quite busy. But they convinced me to give it a shot, and we recorded a couple episodes at the old HeadGum office, and it was just very fun. Like I'd only played D&D a handful of times before that. One of them being with Murph and Emily, like at their house. Actually, I played a what was his name? I played like a version of Beverly Togold, who's the character I played on NADPOD. But it was I believe it was like a druid, and it was kind of like an old man character who was just kind of like the sort of classic archetype of like old man druid who wanders out of the woods and just finds himself embroiled in some sort of a political scheme in the city. So anyway, we had played a couple times. I had played maybe like one or two times before that in college, and then we started playing on mic. And I feel like we all learned very quickly, Jake especially, who had never played. But we just were really having so much fun that we kept recording and we posted the episodes. And, you know, we luckily all had audiences built in from our time at College Humor. And then, you know, Jake, obviously, from Jake and Amir, and Murph and Emily from, like, appearing in a lot of College Humor originals and having written, like, a comedy book. So we had like, we brought our own audiences. So it wasn't like we were starting from nothing, but people really liked it. And we started a Patreon and it kind of took off from there. So that's the meandering version of the story. I hope that all made sense.
Yeah, I've got to imagine even coming in with your own individual audiences, like that initial, like that show took off very quickly. And I imagine that's like just a very exciting moment of like, oh, we're doing this new thing and people like it right away. That's great.
It was super exciting. I think that like, just honestly, like adding Jake in, because Jake's like so naturally funny and just like picked it up so well and was like so eager. I think that really helped, like making it like, you know, a foursome. And also just like having Jake's passion kind of like carried a lot of it. And also, of course, you know, like Emily and Murph being just like such incredible improvisers and talented people, and Murph being such a good DM really helped. And I think like we were all just learning as we went in one way or another, because I think, you know, we were also forming this little NADPOD partnership where we all had extra responsibilities that helped buoy the process. Because, you know, Jake would help us out with obviously the HeadGum angle of things, because that was a company he had founded with Amir. And Murph was DMing, Emily was doing music, and I was doing a lot of like the merchandise design, and also like, you know, just any graphics and assets. So we all kind of found like a secondary niche that made it so that it just kind of increased the tightness of our knit early days, and helped carry us through.
And how is that structure, like from the like business or like just responsibilities spectrum, how has that changed from the start to now? And like, how have you added any people to that team and like augmented it to make it easier for the core four of you?
Sure. I mean, we work with a fulfillment center for like our merchandise, and they have some like designers that we use for that stuff. We have like a couple of editors we use. Work with Trevor Lyons, who's incredible. You might know Trevor.
From New York, yeah.
Yeah, Trevor is great. He's super funny and just like incredibly, like an editor that just totally gets the humor. You don't have to explain anything to him. And Daniel Ramos, of course, who handles a lot of the Trinavel stuff. And Ferris Monshi from HeadGum, who most recently worked with Jake on the Skeldova series. So we've been branching out a little more and working with like editors and sound designers just to kind of help us all make the hours a little more 10 to 6 as opposed to 10 to 10. So that's kind of been the life improvement we've made of late. And then we also, you know, when we go on like live show tours, we've got a team of people as well. We have an incredible tour manager, and then also all of the people at the individual venues we work with. So yeah, I think the core team has stayed pretty much the same, but we have like a lot more support these days.
And in like those kind of 8 years, you know, looking at it, and can you identify moments where you feel like we're always curious about process, and you know, it's where you're at now. You've listed some names and stuff that you brought on. Can you identify moments where like your processes leveled up in making this show, where you were just like, oh, recording this way is going to make things easier, or editing this way, or what have you?
That's a good question. It's a very technical, crunchy question. Well, I know that like the first big level up was when Emily started doing music for the show. I feel like that's really, I mean, you can kind of hear it. That's like when things took off. I think like hearing Emily's tracks when we would like listen back to episodes to prepare for like the next recordings just kind of elevated the whole thing. I think it's also, there's like, I'm trying to remember the first instance of it in the show. It's fairly early on. I think it's like, you know, when we get to like Galateron, which is maybe like the second arc of the first campaign, it's like really when the score kind of fully comes into place. And I feel like that's really that's like one of the first level up moments of the show, because like Emily's composing is so fantastic, and it just kind of elevates every moment. And I think that, you know, I've just been inspired by that when I DM and edit now, just to try and like, number one, use as much of her music as possible and like beg her for music whenever I can, but also just like try and think about like score and soundscape. And I think that's like, that made a switch from just like, you know, a bunch of folks playing D&D together to a bunch of folks like making a audio drama together. I think that was like a pivotal moment. And then, yeah, I guess I'm trying to think of other, I mean, like we kind of were forced to evolve because of COVID, because we had to start recording separately. So we had to kind of all figure out our shit. I remember I had a pantry office that I was recording in at our house for 2 years in a row, I think. So we all had to learn a little more about like sound design and stuff like that. And I think that's really when, like, you know, we started sharing the load a little more, because like early on, like Murph did a ton of the editing, and we all kind of like learned how to edit, or at least how to like divvy that up more. Because I think that there's a side effect that I'm sure you're aware of, which is like when you're recording clean audio from four distinct sources, number one, you have to sync it all. And then number two, because all of the audio sources are clean, you can just be as modular as you want. You can just get so granular with your approach and like scooch everything around to make the timing just perfect. And then you end up with this like editing file of just little like colored matchsticks all next to each other. So I think that like we had to learn almost like how to change our approach to make it easier to like change our approach so that we didn't get too in the weeds. I think like, and honestly, that has really been like the back 4 years, I feel like, have been us just trying to figure out how to like avoid the weeds as much as possible, how to make it like fun and streamlined, as it were.
There's an element of like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good enough, or
yeah,
the enemy
totally
of putting it out.
And I think like, you know, not to say that what we're doing right now is good enough. I think like what we've done of late is the best stuff we've ever done in a way. I think it's like, it's, we continue to polish and succeed. I think that like Jake's Skaldova campaign, Emily's Twilight Sanctorum campaign, and then, you know, of course, like campaign three that Murph did, I think is like just some stellar, super fun D&D. So I feel like, yeah, we've been finding ways to just keep it as polished as possible without like killing ourselves.
Yeah. And then I guess kind of flipping to the other side of this, like level ups and polish are great. Can you identify moments where you face, we've talked a bit about this, like burnout can be a problem when you're making something for this long. Can you identify like moments you faced that and how you moved past them as a team, like finding that sustainability over, you know, 8 years of making this show together?
I think that, you know, it's a big issue, especially because Murph was kind of like helming a lot of the campaigns, and I think it was a lot of work, and we were realizing we need to help him out more and help like carry that weight. So I think that honestly, post-campaign three, I think we've had like a big shift where we're like, well, we're all going to try and DM a little more and share that load a little more than we had in the past, so that we can make this a little more sustainable. So I think that's like really, that's really where the shift is. And I think we've tried doing more shorter form campaigns, and we found some success with that. And I think that might be kind of like the move for the future is like doing shorter form, more like season long campaigns, but returning to previous worlds as well, but generally not going for too long in one world to avoid, I feel like stagnation and burnout, and just like to keep it fun for everyone, if that makes sense.
And that definitely follows with the campaign that you guys are currently doing, which is Trinivale Lextrade.
Yeah, we just recorded the finale last week.
Oh, congratulations.
I think it will have aired by the time that this episode is out. So I guess I can say people will know that I got my ass kicked. I got whomped. And I've just been like, it's such a weird feeling. And I feel like everyone that's DM'd or GM'd before like feels it, which is just like, I'll just lie awake in bed being like, damn, if I had used my action differently. Mm-hmm. And it's honestly, it's nice to have that to focus on. It's nice to have like bullshit problems like that to focus on.
Our current campaign for My First Dungeon is we're playing a game called Perils and Princesses. And it's an adventure called Sweet Revenge. And it's like a witch cursed a town with a candy curse and everyone's turning into candy. And princesses are trying to like break the curse. And there's an encounter in it in episode 5. Which I don't know if this will have come out yet. But basically, there's a big, bad, scary thing. And it's like one of the biggest, bad, scary things in the book. And the players fucking destroyed me. This is like, I was telling them the whole fucking time, like, this guy's so scary. This guy's so, and they crit on him like crit and max damage twice and killed him in 2 hits. And I was like, what the hell? I didn't get to play with my toys.
That is the thing. It's just like, oh, I had so much more I could do. But then, I don't know, that's always the fun part when you get to like, it's like the only retconning that's allowed is where you're like, well, actually, I meant to do that. Like, you guys are just so good at this. I hope you don't rest on your laurels too much because something even worse is coming. Or, you know, like,
hope you like that win I just gave you.
maybe you're the true monsters for overwhelming this monster so quickly. Think about what power has wrought. Think about, have you considered that? Look at your hands. They're stained with the blood that you once held so pure and sacred. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Are we the baddies?
Yeah, but I don't know. It is like you do have to kind of it's the fun part about D&D is just like that narrative shakeup that you can't control.
And then how are you liking I believe this is the first time you guys have run like a published module in Curse of Strahd. How have you liked running something that is coming from a module and like having to bend it around the crazy choices your players make, especially that particular combination of characters?
I think that like that was what drew me to it in the first place is like the Trinivale triplets, who's kind of like our, I think I've heard it best described as, you know, like it's the always sunny characters in a fantasy setting. Just like they like to squabble with each other. They're very petty. They're very materialistic. And yet they always succeed despite it all. And I think that's like what drew me to it is being like, oh, like what's the most contrasting setting I could put them in. And of course it's Barovia, it's Ravenloft. So like that was kind of the seed of the idea. And I'd done a live show a while back that was like the Trinivale triplets in like a Bachelor-esque parody, but with Strahd, where like Strahd was like choosing which of them would be his like eternal consort. So like I looked through the Ravenloft book before and like it's very fun. I feel like it is a book that is just full of weird little guys and strange occurrences, which I think is really what you want, number one, in D&D, but specifically with these characters, where it's just like, I've got so many weird things I can throw at them, and they'll react to it in incredibly funny ways without fail. So I think like that was what appealed to me. So again, this is like the first time we've like officially used a module. Jake used a little bit of Sunless Citadel as inspiration for his Skaldova campaign. And we've definitely obviously pulled inspiration from campaigns in the past. But yeah, this was the first time like we've run something essentially like as raw as possible. And that was like my challenge to myself. It's like, how do I make this a true to life Strahd campaign while also like condensing it essentially to like a third of what a normal Strahd campaign is. And also doing it, you know, for a publicly consumed podcast. and also with these maniac characters. So it was like, I think the Chiraka deck was stacked against me, but but I had a blast with it, and I feel like it is something that I hope if people like listen to it, if they take anything away, it's that like the module is there just as a guide, and like honestly, you should not read it as raw. Like you should not take it rules as written, and you should not like follow it like to the T. Like it should just be like a kind of inspirational springboard that you can like reference use as inspiration, but like it should by no means should be your Bible. And that was kind of like what I learned going through this process, because I'd never run a module before, which, and I feel like Strahd's a weird one to start with, but like
it's tough.
Yeah,
to start
so
with,
I think I learned a lot about like how to do that and how to use it as inspiration. And it's just like just by the nature of like the way these games work, you know, you're just instantly having to like invent backstory, or a character will like find a book or something and be like, "What's this?" And be like, "Well, that's a book from a D12 table of books, but you seem fascinated by it, so now I'm going to come up with some bullshit explanation for what it actually means," and then that'll just expand upon itself. So yeah, I had a blast with it. I will say, like, it was really tricky condensing everything, because like for those not familiar, the way Strahd works is like you have a card reading up top that kind of dictates where all of the like magic items and allies in the world will be, and it's a big book. There's like 12 kind of distinct locations, essentially. So you really do not know how the adventure is going to go. And I think that's like what appeals about it, but it's also was terrifying doing this for a podcast where I need to like plan some stuff in advance, you know? But yeah, so I that was the part that I like really challenged myself to be like, okay, I'm just going to put this all out here. I'm going to like actually do the card reading, and then we'll just go from there. And very fortunately, I drew a couple of cards that put stuff in the same location. There's like a couple things that like got put in the same location. And then like I did a lot of condensing. Like I kind of combined a couple of the villages just so that things could be in the same place. But yeah, I had a blast with it. I recommend running modules. I feel like anytime people DM, they're like, "Ah, yeah, but I'm just going to homebrew it." And like, I love that too. But I do think that like, don't be too proud to like use a module, or at least just like have one as a reference. Cause like there's a lot of good stuff in there, and it's nice to just have like at least a little description you can pull from sometimes for like how a room should look or like what monster should be there. And yeah, I had a blast with it. And honestly, I've said this on the show before. It's just in my bones now. I'm like, if somebody asked me to run a Curse of Strahd campaign for them, I would have no choice but to say yes, because it's just I really liked it, and it's just like it's just useless knowledge that I contain now. So like,
right, I gotta use it. I've gotta exercise these demons.
Something with it. Gotta be exercised from my body somehow. And also like that is the fun thing about D&D and tabletop games is like I'm already thinking, oh, I know how I could run some of these encounters better, like what to tweak. And I feel like this is like one of the only outlets where you get to do that, where you get to like try things again. And you're always like, there's a lot of like recycling and reusing for future campaigns and future games. So I don't know. It's left me feeling even more fired up and inspired. So yeah. Overall, I guess you just asked like if I liked doing it, and the answer is yes. It's the talk of the
table. Pocket Bard is the immersive audio app that allows game masters to weave music, ambience, and sound effects seamlessly into their games with just the push of a button. It's intuitive, easy to use, and now Pocket Bard has gone from your pocket to your PC. That's right, Pocket Bard is now available on your phone and your desktop computer, making it even easier to bring in the perfect music right when the climactic battle begins. Now GMs who run everything from their PC have access to Pocket Bard alongside their other tools. It's the same Bard on a bigger screen. Plus, Pocket Bard is releasing their new cozy lo-fi collection for free to celebrate the new desktop version. These scenes will add even more flair to the quiet, contemplative moments of your game, where your players sit around the campfire and make plans for their next adventure. Download Pocket Bard for your phone or your computer from the App Store or straight from pocketbard.app. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. They can make your perfect mini in a variety of materials, including bronze, color standees, and color plastic options. They can even put your custom miniature inside a 20-sided die, so your character lives in every attack roll and every saving throw. And if you like to 3D print your own minis, Hero Forge offers downloadable model files so you can 3D print your unique designs at home. And Hero Forge is constantly expanding its catalog of customization options. New parts are added every single week, and major features like new species and custom posing are updated on a regular basis. So visit heroforge.com to start designing your custom miniature today.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
We're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
I feel like I've been on a similar journey where when I started GMing, I was very much in the camp of like, I got to make it all myself. This has got to be, you know, it's got to all come from my mind. And then the more I go, I'm like, actually, other people have better ideas than me. actually, like me and this author will collaborate. They put a bunch of great ideas on and I'll riff on it and we'll make something cool together.
Yeah. And that's, again, it all comes back to that opening yourself up to collaborating in whatever form it might take. So, yeah. And I guess, you do this punishment ritual like once every couple months because you're like not only picking a new module but an entirely new system.
Yeah. You should see the shelf next to me is just literally I think at least 100 different games.
Do you have one? I'm hijacking the interview, but do you have one that I should play or that we should try and play on that pod?
Oh my god, this is a dream. Oh my god. Okay, hang on. Actually,
yeah.
Yes. Okay, wait. I'm gonna pull out a selection. I'll do a little presentation.
I'm curious if you have the same immediate thought that I have, Brian.
Oh man. Okay. Well,
because
I have
an immediate thought.
Okay.
What's your immediate thought? Well, I guess
my immediate thought is I think y'all would have so much fun with Slug Blaster.
Oh
yeah.
Slug Blaster Caldwell is teens riding hoverboards across dimensions as they're trying to be cool and dealing with teen angst, and it's
amazing,
so fucking fun, and so like it's the tone and vibes dripping off that game are so good, and really simple like roll system, d6 dice pool, like it slaps.
We have been kind of slowly working our way through every bad Ninja Turtles ripoff show that was ever made.
Yeah.
I think most recently we did Street Sharks. We've just been kind of like watching a couple episodes
of each. Street Sharks. Wow.
And I feel like this could really easily be skinned to be, radical mutant teens.
Oh, easily could be skinned for radical mutant teens. Absolutely.
This is great. I'm going to check it out. Well, this is one of my big hobbies of late is buying tabletop games and modules that I will never, ever play. So maybe this is the one that finally tips its way into the actual physical realm of playing.
You have come to the right space.
Yeah, you've also opened the full floodgates from two guys who just kind of know about new games for a living. So if you want any recs.
Okay, here we go. Here are all the recommendations.
Okay, hit me.
Okay. I'm trying to think also in your vibe. So let me go outside classic NADPOD vibes to start. First one, 10 Candles.
Oh, I've played 10 Candles.
Oh, 10 Candles is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's not a comedy, but I'd love to see you guys do it.
Mm. Yeah, I played that with some of my friends, and it's just like the vibes are immaculate with that one.
Oh, immaculate.
Perfect game.
I've never had a story, like I've never gotten out of a game of 10 Candles and not ranked it in like my top, you know, tabletop experiences of all time. It's just so good. All right. I think this is actually my true recommendation. Brindlewood Bay.
Ooh.
Where you are little, like, it's like Murder, She Wrote meets Call of Cthulhu. You are little old ladies trying to solve murder mysteries in like a seaside town. But as you go on, you realize all the mysteries are connected by like some cosmic conspiracy.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, wow.
And the system of mystery solving is like the players generate the mystery as they solve it and like iterate on clues so that by the time you get to the conclusion of the mystery, it's like it makes exact sense because everybody sort of has informed the clues and stuff. Very,
Holy
very cool
shit.
System.
That sounds, and also the little old lady aspect seems very fun. I feel like we could have a lot of fun with that.
There's also a whole thing in it where like you have your cozy pastime or something. So, and like that has mechanical advantages and stuff.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I always like games with a system baked in where it's just like, all right, here's like, you know, I think Blades in the Dark has it where like you got like your downtime activity that you use to like relieve stress or something like that. And I always like that, or like tying it to a, like having like one free mechanic slot where she's like, I'm really good at this one thing. Mm-hmm. And I do think like D&D sometimes that gets like lost in translation a little bit where it's like you have your proficiencies and stuff like that. But like sometimes on the fly, especially as a DM, you're just like, I don't know, just roll sleight of hand to see if you can break this lock. I don't know if you have tools for it or whatever, but just, we got to, we just got to roll some dice here.
And also if you like Blades in the Dark, that's the Forge in the Dark system is the basis for Slug Blaster.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. I've always been wanting to try one of those Forged in the Dark games. So again, I've got the Blades in the Dark book back there. And I just haven't had a chance to dive into it. So there we go. Maybe Slug Blaster is my way in.
It's interesting because Slug Blaster kind of crystallized Forged in the Dark design for me. Like, I was a Blades fan anyway, but something about the simplifications and changes of Slug Blaster really got me.
I think the thing that, like, tripped me up about Blades is, like, it's a lot of kind of setting the scene. And I think I in a way where, like, normally that it's the DM's job, but it's, like, more of a conversation in Blades, right? But I believe, I could be wrong, but it's just, like, there's, like, different kind of context for each encounter. And you kind of like decide those together. I think it's like, you know, controlled or like risky.
Your approach and
I think
stuff.
Are some of the words you use.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's like a very easy like shorthand for like establishing environment. But I feel like it tripped me up when I first read it. But yeah, man, I feel like in the context of radical teens, maybe I can get my head around it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Okay, I'm sorry. We can talk about NADPOD again if you want.
Oh, no. I've got,
no, Brian's
I've
still
got
going through his list,
more
I think.
Books.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Give him to me. Give him to me.
Okay, this is a good short one.
Okay.
It's a game called Scurry, the game that gathers speed. You're playing as like woodland creatures who are going on an adventure. But as you are playing, the die you're using shrinks. So like it gets smaller and smaller and success gets harder and harder and you also get closer and closer to failing.
It moves like hell as a game. It's such a great one-shot game.
Great like one-shot, two-shot. Also, I'm going to say it because Elliot is too... Elliot won't. In this new edition, Elliot...
What are you so afraid of, Elliot?
Elliot has a great original adventure called Fang, Steel, and Stolen Honor in the second edition of the book.
Elliot, you buried the lead. You buried the lead, you motherfucker. How could you
bring
do this
game up?
How could you deny me praise? That's incredible. Now I have to read this. I'm so excited. This is amazing.
Okay, now I'm just going to shout out about my friend. If you want even more Elliot Davis games.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to embarrass the hell out of him right now. Actually, this I think you would like. Rom-com Drama Bomb. It's a game for exactly three players. Two of you are playing rom-com tropes trying not to fall in love, and the third person is an evil supervillain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do.
And has strapped bombs to the other two's hearts and is making them act out the perfect rom-com.
Wow.
It's a very meta, scene-based rom-com tropey.
It's like a
game.
Speed angle to it. Wow.
It's like it's like if you took Speed and When Harry Met Sally and threw them at each other as hard as you can.
Wait, does the villain, are they playing like the DM role or are they
it's
like
kind
they're
of a player
split
as well? DM role. It's like a GMless. Yeah.
Oh, sick. Oh, that's really fun. Yeah, we've never done like GMless stuff before.
Oh, I think the four of you would get down with GMless. I'm gonna sneak in with one final rec and then we can get back to the proper interview. I think this game might be right up y'all's alley. It's called Last Train to Bremen. And it's for exactly four players.
Okay.
And it is four cursed musicians that made a deal with the devil and then are running away from the devil. The whole game takes place on the train they're running away on. They're playing liar's dice and getting pissed off at each other about their career. And every time you lose a die in liar's dice, you like bring up a shitty memory with one of the other bandmates. And so you're like, it's just like being like bitchy, angry band members as you ride on a train running from the devil. It is a perfect game.
Wow.
It is a really fucking good game.
I like, a mechanic involving bitching with your teammate seems very fun.
Yeah. Well, that was a very fun detour. Thank you for letting us do one of our favorite things in the world, which
y'all
is just talking about games we love.
Yeah, you've got to compile these recs for me. These also, I gotta go to the game store today. This is amazing.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
We'll shoot you an email. Send you a list that is longer than you'd like it to be.
Well, so I actually am going to pull this back into the conversation, I think, effectively.
No. I'll be amazed if you do this well. I'll be amazed if this is seamless.
Well, so there was an interesting thing we were talking about where on a D&D court episode, Morkborg came up and called you were the only person kind of aware of Morkborg at the table. And I'm curious when you think about like, you know, I know D&D is in the name of your podcast, but like, how do you think about when you would want to potentially bring in other systems? Like, is that in the future that you want for NADPOD?
I think I kind of like exploring new systems. I think usually what happens is they're kind of like they become inspiration. Like, I think we've done a lot more like degrees of success with our dice rolls after playing Pathfinder. And I think usually what'll happen is like, if we don't bring in a new system, like we kind of like pull something from it. Or like, I mean, we have kind of like a lot of like extra elements of our show because of our Patreon. So like sometimes we have like a mixed bag tier, which is like a higher tier on our podcast where we do like an extra episode every month. And like, usually we're kind of scrambling to figure out what to do with that. So like simpler games that we can kind of like pick up and play easily, like do slot in very well there. The big problem is like, it's just, you know, we're four old ass adults that have like full lives. So it's like, it's just hard to like schedule things. So having to learn a new system on top of like recording it is a little tricky. Like that's a tougher buy-in these days, but like I'm certainly, I have the curiosity for it. I think we found that like, you know, like lots of things can be skinned with 5e pretty successfully, but like, I don't know. Morkborg excited me for a lot of reasons. Number one, like the art and design of it is really fun. It's just like the layout is really cool. It's got like foil pages. It's got that just like neon pink pop on some of the pages that like really appeals to me. The art is fucking like gorgeous and like gnarly and metal. And it's like a very simple system. And I think it like we've joked a lot about doing kind of a like edgy Dark Souls-esque kind of like campaign or one shot where we all just play the edgiest characters possible, and I feel like Morkborg would like really lend itself to that in some ways. But again, this goes back to my hobby of just like buying tabletop systems and never playing them. But I think like what I will do, even if I don't play it on the show, I do want to run Morkborg at some point and like see like what I can pull from it. Because I do think that, like, you know, even if we don't end up playing more systems, we certainly like to see what's out there and see how they can be incorporated in some ways. But yeah, I don't know. I think Morkborg could be fun for, like, you know, like a one or two shot. So never say never. I think we are trying to do more shorter seasons and, like, be a little more experimental. So, like, I think it really comes down to, like, if I can just get everyone excited about it. Because I do think I am, like, the lone... I am the lone system collector. I'm the one who like gathers all the modules and pours over them. And I think like everyone else, it's like a bigger buy-in. But we'll see.
You're doing the
everybody
Lord's
needs
work.
A yeah, everyone needs a friend like you. That's how it starts. Yeah. You gotta build up your arsenal so then you can spread the good word.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if you guys can see my bookshelf properly, but I do. I've got Pathfinder over there. I've got Call of Cthulhu. I'm very curious about that one as well. Again, like all stuff, I feel like each of these has like fun mechanics that I think could like work well in 5e campaigns. But like, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I can't say anything definitively, but like, I've got that itch. This is my malfunction, and I'm going to make it everyone's problem.
I had one more thought for, and then we'll truly and wellly move off this topic. One more game that I think is a great game. It's very and is incredibly easy sell because there's like no rules to it. Honey Heist.
Oh my gosh, I've been obsessed with all of Grant Howitt's like one page RPGs. They're fantastic. Yeah,
they're phenomenal. I feel like Honey Heist.
I've been inspired by them. Like I did a little thing for the podcast a while back called Instant Minion, which was kind of like just a one page monster generator where you can kind of like just build little like essentially not minions like the film franchise, but minions like the minions of a dark lord. You could make a minion in it. But I love those. I love those like one page games where you kind of just like have a random collection of dice, like a very, they just like a couple tables to get you going, and then you're just off to the races. I think those are very fun. So yeah, that's another great source of inspiration.
So to pivot away from alternate games, the other thing we really wanted to talk about with this interview is the live shows that y'all do.
Yeah.
Because that's gotten kind of insane. Like a couple of years ago, I went to your Carnegie Hall show.
Oh, wow.
Which was a lot of fun. And I remember thinking, like, this is crazy that someone's playing Carnegie Hall and playing D&D. And coming up soon, you're playing Radio City Music Hall and the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah. We're doing our big bucket list shows this year.
I'm kind of just curious, like, how that started, how that came to be, and how that, like, evolved over time.
So we, I think Jake from Jake and Amir had done a lot of live show touring in the College Humor days and then also with his comedy partner, Amir. So like we had kind of an established network there. I think he literally has like a touring agent. So he hooked us up with them. And I think, you know, it wasn't like a hard sell because like other shows had done, live D&D touring and that, you know, Critical Role kind of blazed the trail there. So like we knew like it would work. But I think it was just something we were excited to do. And it's honestly, it's like one of my favorite types of D&D to play because it is just, it is a sport. It is a sport. And like when you have like the live audience there backing you up, like it just becomes even more fun. You know, just like hearing people like cheering for like a number is like, that's what humans love to do. We love to cheer for number.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
we love it.
Yeah. When number big, me gets so happy. When number small, me happy too. Different happy.
Different happy. Still good.
Yeah. But I think that, so after we did like a live show in Seattle. Within the first year of the show. And it was a very small venue, but it was just like so fun. And like, the live show energy was there. And I think we'd all had experiences early in our kind of comedy careers of doing live shows. Like I did a lot of comedy theater in college, like every other worst person you know. And I think Murph and Emily had done improv at UCB. And like Jake obviously had done like a lot of like live show stuff with Amir and like with like the College Humor Live, which we used to do. So like we all like had that experience, and then it was just very fun like getting to do it via the lens of D&D, and it just kind of reawoke something in us. So I think it's something we've really loved doing, and it's also a thing I really like, is it just like meant that I got to go to cities and places I had never been before. So it was like a nice little like experience just getting to like bum around different towns and cities that I probably would have never gone to. I mean, like I got to go to Australia, and we're going to go back to Australia, and I don't know if I would have ever made it to Australia otherwise, so I'm like excited that it's like giving me that opportunity. So yeah, I don't know, it's a very fortunate little side effect of our show and our business. But yeah, I will say for Radio City, which potentially has happened, and if not, please go buy tickets and go. We're like trying to do a little more production on this one. We're doing some like stage design, putting together a little a little something extra that you'll see up top at the beginning of the show. And yeah, we're just like actually trying to like make it a little bigger of a show than we normally do, because it is, you know, it's Radio City. We got to like up the production. But we're excited. We're like putting a little more planning and production into this than we normally do. Not that we like wing it normally, but I feel like this one we're like, you know,
Carnegie Hall winging it. Radio City, we'll put in some elbow grease. Yeah.
No, but like we've just been excited to like make this, you know, like a big production, as opposed to like us playing D&D on stage at a card table. So I'm excited for people to see it. Unless it happened and it went poorly, and then like I guess I'm sorry.
Going into live shows, especially when they get to that scale, like, you know, Radio City, Carnegie Hall, Sydney Opera House, I don't even know how to necessarily even approach prepping for that. Like, how do you guys approach prepping for that that's different than a normal show? Because I'm sure there's got to be a difference playing for a live audience.
It's not that different. I think that, like, honestly, a lot of the things we've learned from live shows, we've carried over into our recordings. I think the biggest thing, this is, like, such a small thing, but, like, pre-rolling damage. We pre-roll all the damage usually that our characters can do so that we're not like rolling like all of the damage dies on stage. And I do think that like we kind of simplify things that usually like we found that the things that work better for live shows are a little more like games and game shows as opposed to like pure just like big boss battles. Like there will still be that, because like you want to see someone smite, you want to see someone cast a spell, and you want to see the big number, but like I think we found that, you know, it's more fun to have like interesting encounters versus like, you know, combat heavy encounters. So I think we have like learned like what works better. But yeah, the other thing is to give you a small peek behind the screen, we do, when we record for the show, obviously it's like, it's all kind of a black box mystery held tightly in the DM's heart. But for live shows, we will huddle up and just be like, okay, here's like what you need to know going in. Think about like, there's a little more light direction. Like obviously nothing is spoiled. We don't know like what's going to happen in the story, but like there is, since we need to like stick to a certain time limit and like make it entertaining, we will share like a few more details about like what's going to happen up top and where the story will go, just so that like, you know, people don't get too, again, it comes back to like the weeds and avoiding the weeds and not getting too like bogged down and stuff, and like just making sure that we can tell the best and funniest story live on stage as possible. The big thing is, we will usually kind of come up with what we're doing. The only thing we'll really like plan in advance is like while we're backstage, Murph or whoever's DMing will be like, okay, this is where you're going to start. So think about like what your character is going to be doing at the start. Like what's like your kind of just a little joke you can have ready to go. And then it kind of like, you know, unwinds from there.
Right. Come out swinging, then we'll figure it out along the way.
Totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From all the live shows that you've done, are there any like really standout moments that you can think of that was just like, man, we hit it out of the park here?
There was we did a live show in New York a while back with Nathan, actually.
Yeah, Nathan.
And I remember there was like a moment where we like, I think he saved our ass with like a portent role, if I recall. And it was just like one of those big triumphant moments where like we were like hoisting Nathan up and like carrying him around the stage. That was also a very funny one. I remember, like, I think the premise of that one is that, like, Beverly had died for some reason and had been, like, revived as a revenant of Pelor. And I was just, like, really leaning into the fact that, like, I was kind of, like a gross corpse character. and I was just going around and, like, putting on like a horror movie child sort of vibe to all of the characters that we were interacting with, being like, you could have saved me. This is your fault. I might be conflating two different live shows, but I do remember that being very fun. Yeah, I think the thing that's like fun about live shows is like when you play D&D like and record it as a podcast, you kind of have to be like, okay, can you talk into the mic, please? Can you make sure that you're like seated and like getting good, mm-hmm. clean audio? But for a live show, just fucking like we're running around, we're tossing dice on stage, we're like chucking them in the audience if they roll poorly. It's a little more like loose and energizing, and like you can I don't know. There's a frenzy to them that I really enjoy.
It's sort of, I have a cutesy question, but I do think it's a relevant one. And I think that one of the things we talk about a lot when we're like casting and stuff, and like I think this is true, like looking at the success of shows like NADPOD and D20, is like it's very clear how being an improviser and a comedian, like and a funny person in general, makes you a better role player. But I'm curious if you have thoughts on how being a D&D podcaster has made you a better comedian. Like, has it like fed back into your like comedy chops in any way?
Whoa, man, that's a interesting question. I think maybe not, because like maybe because I'm so like DM pilled at the moment. I'm just like, I can't do anything without having a table to consult.
I can do jokes, but I do need a D6 roll table.
Yeah. You're asking me to make a decision without having 14 pages of documents to reference? Excuse me?
You've just added bureaucracy to your comedy.
I don't know. I think that, like, yeah, there's something about the D&D framework that does inspire more comedy. And I think, like, definitely, like, opens you up. I think because it's my favorite sort of comedy to do, which is just like, let's come up with a weird ass scenario and play it through. And I think that D&D is kind of like the crystallized version of that. Cause like literally something you might say with your friends is just like, you pretend that you're gonna, they show up late, let's say, and you're like, you pretend you have a baseball bat and you're like hitting their taillights, like, and saying like, apologize to me, apologize. You do some stupid bit. But in D&D, like, you're taking that and you're heightening it even further. And like, I feel like a good example of this is, I feel like on the show, a lot of times we'll just be like, oh, I tackle them, or like, I sock them in the gut. And it's just, it's because D&D is so combat and action oriented. Like, it's always just jumping to 11, at the drop of a hat. Like, you're always like, you're just on the verge of rolling initiative. And I think like maybe that is where the comedy bleed works, and where the comedy inspiration comes in. It's just like knowing how to like ratchet things up and go like A to C very quickly, in very insane and silly ways. So, yeah, tables aside, I would say like pretending to sock people in the gut is really like, we're trying to find that gut punch moment, is something that I think D&D has certainly helped with.
Kodwa, I'm realizing we've gone past our time. So we're going to roll into our,
we're supposed to do 20
question.
Minutes, right?
Oh yeah. So we're
way
just
over.
Just a little bit past. Just a little
damn.
But before we kind of go into the last question, anything else you want to make sure that we cover, or anything else you want to talk about in terms of NADPOD or anything you're working on?
I don't think I have anything specifically. Yeah. Just keep listening to NADPOD. We're about to do, I think if you're listening now, there's a chance we've already started it or it's about to come out. Murph's going to be DMing a new thing. I don't think it's a spoiler to say it's going to be a cyberpunk-inspired campaign. So,
oh, rad.
Yeah. So get excited for that. I know I certainly am. So, yeah, I guess just patreon.com/NADPOD.
That's NADDPOD.
Don't sing yet.
You simply can't. Kodwa, thank you so much for coming to the table. It was a real treat to get to chat with you in this format.
This has been a pleasure, and thank you again for all the recommendations. I'm gonna dive into those after this.
You're gonna have a lot of fun. They're great fucking games. We do have one last question we like to ask everyone who comes on our show, and that is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation of anything. Could be a book, movie, go out for a walk, whatever you like.
What I'm bringing to the table is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 7, Steel Ball Run. I just read all of that, and it's just beautiful insanity. Like, what a wild swing for someone like 20 years into their career to come out with like just such a fantastic, vivid departure that also maintains the spirit of their work. So yeah, I would say, it's certainly not for everyone. It's barely for me, but but it's also one of my favorite things I've ever read. So if you like JoJo and you haven't read Part 7 yet, the anime is coming out soon. I loved it. I'm like mad that it took me this long. So yeah, Steel ball run. Get after it.
Excellent. I love a recommendation that is just barely for me. It is a perfect recommendation. Well, thank you so much, Caldwell, again, for coming to the table. Do you want to remind people one last time where they can find you online if they're looking for you, and where they can listen to NADPOD, where they can get tickets for the live shows?
Yeah, nadpod.com, patreon.com/nadpod. That's where all of our stuff is. And I know you guys have been plugging the Immigrant Rapid Response Fund already. But I would love to just like double up on that. We plugged on the show. It's just a great resource for all of the terrible things happening in Minneapolis and the wider world. So, yeah, give to that if you can, is what I'll say. And yeah, just be nice to each other.
If you want more Talk at the Table or to support what we're doing here, head on over to patreon.com/manysidedmedia. For just a few bucks a month, you can get access to ad-free episodes, bonus roundtables, bonus actual plays for My First Dungeon, original music, even some borderline unplayable original games that I guarantee you'll have fun trying. it's a lot of fun. Rate, review, and follow Talk at the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Table you later.
Table you later. Great. That's our new tagline.
Table you later.